Thank you to honorable members and honorable minister of police and colleagues in the SAPS. By way of background, Jefferson, on the 13th of August 2012, miners at Longmin were involved in unprotected strike demanding a basic salary of 12,500. They were marching towards the K3 shaft, Kari mine, when mine security stopped them and persuaded them to return to the Kopi. Major General Mpembe demanded that the miners should surrender all the dangerous weapon in their possession. The miners refused to concede to the police officer's request, and an agreement was reached to escort them to the Kopi. Tear gas canister and stun grenade were discharged to the miners. The miners retaliated by attacking the police officers. In the process, two officers were hacked to death, three miners shot dead, one police officer sustained serious stab wounds, five members shot and sustained injuries. On the 12th of August 2012, SAPS decided to disarm the miners at the Kopi. On the 16th of August 2012, SAPS members decided to disarm the miners at the Kopi. The police cordoned the Kopi with barbed wire and created one exit point. The shooting took place and resulted in the death of 16 miners at the cattle crawl, scene one. Other miners ran to the Kopi for cover behind the rocks. Police followed them to the Kopi, and 14 miners were shot and killed at scene 2. 59 miners sustained gunshot wounds and were transported to various hospitals for medical treatment. Three miners died at the hospital, and one died in police vehicle at the detention center, bringing the total of miners to 34. Pre-Falun Commission opened its initial investigation. On the 16th of August 2012, IPID commenced with investigations. On the 23rd August 2012, the Falun Judicial Commission was appointed by the President in terms of proclamation 5th of 2012. Thereafter, the then Minister of Police, Honorable Mutetwa, instructed that IPID investigation should be put on hold to allow the commission to conclude its process. The Falun Commission, on the 1st of October 2012, the Falun Commission of Inquiry commenced its work. On the 25th June, the Falun Commission of Inquiry released the report. We must indicate that as IPID, we made it possible for the Falun Commission to commence with its work by providing all the necessary statement and evidence that we had obtained at the time. IPID was then mandated to implement some of the recommendations that have a bearing on its constitutional and legislative mandate. The Falun Commission's Judicial Commission recommendation that have a bearing on IPID's mandate. The Commission recommended that the following matters be referred to the Director of Public Prosecution Northwest for further investigation to determine whether there is a basis for prosecution. Incident of the 13th August 2012. First, the killing of Mr. Sokanyile in the circumstances where there are conflicting versions of allegations that the shooters acted in private defense. Secondly, the killing of Mr. Marty, where there is a different opinion about whether the fatal wound is a gunshot wound or stab wound. Investigation progress in that regard. During the investigation of the above matters, it was decided that the death of two police officers, Warrant Officer Liapaku and Warrant Officer Munene, and one minor, Mr. Chokanisi, an attempted murder of Warrant Officer Baloyi, and five other minors be investigated in conjunction with the above investigation. Investigation in this matter is at an advanced stage, and the following is outstanding: authentication of video footages, certified copies of transcription from Falam Commission of Inquiry, and 10 statements related to the authentication of footages. In terms of our interaction with the NPA in this regard, the due date for submission of this docket has been agreed for the 28th of March 2017. The incident of the 16th of August 2012, scene one, we are to investigate if SAPS members exceeded the bounds of self-defense, the delay in conveying medical assistance to the scene. That was on scene one. On scene two, investigate the issue of command and control failure to stop the operation after scene one, a possible liability of senior police officers in the SAPS, the shooting of striking of strikers by various members of the SAPS. On scene one, 16 minors were shot dead next to the cattle crawl. On scene two, 14 minors were shot and killed at the Kopi Hospital. Three minors were shot either at scene one and or scene two and died at the hospital. Police vehicle counter. One minor was shot either at scene one and scene two and died inside a police vehicle or police counter at a detention center. That brings the total to 34. Investigation progress. The body in the counter. The death was never reported. As a result, the case of defeating the ends of justice and failure to report the death in custody in contravention of Section 29(1)(a)(b) read with Section 33 of the IPID Act were registered. The matter is fully investigated, and the docket was submitted to the NPA for decisions for decision on the 7th of March 2017. Investigation progress on the incident of the 16th August 2012, scene 1 and 2, hospital. Investigation in this regard is at an advanced stage. The following is outstanding: authentication of video footage, certified copies of transcription from Falam Commission of Inquiry, reconstruction chain statement and video footage authentication statements, 64 warning statement out of the 184, and scene reconstruction. In terms of the agreement with the NPA, also the due date for submission of this is on the 24th of April 2017. The effect of Major General Naidu's action, medical attention and at scene one and scene two, paramedics under the control of Major General Naidu at the forward holding area were diverted to scene two without attending to the victims at scene one, which was much closer. The shooting by Major General Naidu, circumstances surrounding the shooting by Major General Naidu at scene two, his failure to inform IPID investigators at the initial stages of investigation, the fact that he discharged the firearm at the scene, at scene two, and his failure to submit his firearm for ballistic analysis. Investigation progress on this matter. All relevant statements have been obtained pertaining to this aspect of investigation and has been forwarded to NPA for further directives. The consequence of SAPS members' attempt to mislead the Commission, SAPS presentation to the Commission Exhibit L, and Chapter 23, C4, the Falam Commission reporting case, that there is a prima facie case that the National Commissioner and the Provincial Commissioner for Northwest knew the true facts and approved Exhibit L, SAPS presentation, which contained incorrect facts. Investigation progress in this regard, all relevant statements pertaining to this matter were obtained and forwarded to NPA for further directives. Lost memory stick recordings, minutes of the National Management Forum meeting. Chapter 1972 of the Falam report indicated that memory stick containing top secret information, it would appear prima facie that Brigadier Malahlela is guilty of contravening Section 41BDD of the Protection of Information Act 1992 for neglecting or failing to take proper care of the memory stick. Investigation progress in this regard, all relevant statements pertaining to this matter were obtained and forwarded to NPA for further directives. Falam Commission's comments on IPID. On Chapter 12, one of the Falam Commission reported report indicated that the Commission criticized the handling of the scene by IPID and lack of personnel and experts by IPID. IPID relied on the SAPS. IPID did not function independently in all aspects of the investigation. Section 24.5 of the IPID Act states that no self-incriminating answer or statement made by any person to an investigator will be admissible in criminal proceedings against such person except in criminal proceedings of perjury. E, the staffing and resourcing of IPID should be reviewed to ensure that it's able to carry out its function effectively. Just as a note there to indicate that when the Marikana tragedy occurred, IPID was only 4 months old. Our response to the comments by the Commission is that IPID has started the process of training investigators on better handling of crime scene. This is an ongoing intervention. Reliance on SAPS with regard to experts will continue to be a challenge until appropriate funding is secured. As far as we're concerned, there's no issue with regard to Section 24.5, as we understand that where a person incriminates himself or herself, the interview will be stopped, the person will be informed of his rights and taken to a magistrate for a confession. Funding based on IPID expansion strategy has been requested from Treasury without any success. Instead, IPID budget has been reduced, resulting in freezing of posts for investigators. Marikana funding from IPID baseline budget. The slides will show that IPID has funded the Marikana investigation from its baseline budget to the tune of $1.5 million. Without getting any funding as per the recommendation by the Commission. IPID had initially requested a funding to the tune of $5 million at the time the Falam Commission report was released. We have now made a further request because no funding was received, to the tune of $3.9 million. And these are the activities that we've identified that needed a funding. External experts, sourcing of crime scene, by securing of crime scene by security personnel, fencing of the crime scene, traveling and accommodation, maintenance of crime scene vehicle, analyst notebook, independent pathologies. So we're looking at about $3.9 million. We've had an offer for the usage of the drone that must do a 3D coverage of the scene, and that part it will be covered at no cost. Post-Marikana shooting, assault and torture cases. The cases were that of torture and assault, and there were 152 victims. The case were referred to the Northwest NPA for decision, and it came back with queries which are attended to. These cases involved 39 cases of common assault, 106 cases of assault GBH, and 7 cases of torture. In conclusion, it will not be possible to conclude the investigation with regard to the reconstruction of Scene 2 unless the required funding is secured. This issue has been discussed and conversed extensively with the NPA with regard to this challenge, and we've undertook to do what as IPED investigators will be able to do with regard to the investigation as directed by the NPA. However, with regard to reconstruction of Scene 2, because it requires external experts as per the recommendation by the Falam Commission, we will not be able to do that until we get the funding. Capacity still remains a challenge for IPED. It is important that IPED is appropriately staffed and funded to be able to execute its mandate. I thank you, Chairperson and members.
Thank you very much. IPED has had the presentation. Thank you very much. Right, thank you, members. We will now go to questions with regard to the two presentations. The first two from my side, and then we will start there from the side of Honourable Marke. My first question is to the Honourable Minister of Police. Minister, in terms of the Parliament recommendations, there's a clear recommendation about the demilitarization of the police. Now, there is one school of thought that says that there is not, the pace is very slow. It's 5 years since Marikana in August, and actually, are we making progress with that issue? Now, I know the Secretariat of Police is busy with a study on demilitarization and also the issue of the ranks, but that school report also says that the ranks is a major issue linked to demilitarization. I just want to get a sense of what is your response to that? Is there, in terms of the timelines, enough emphasis in terms of speed of ensuring that demilitarization is dealt with extensively as indicated by the Parliament Commission? So I just want to get a sense of that. Then my second question is to IPED. In terms of your presentation today, in terms of those cases of high-ranking officers, that is with the NPA, I think IPED also came to this committee January last year. It's actually a repeat. The matters is still with the NPA. Now, I just want to know, it's a year since then. What is the reason for the delay? There's also in the slide no indication of timelines for when they will be reporting back. If the committee can just be, you know, informed of what is the issues there. Let's go to the honourable members. Honourable Mabija. Honourable Imam Sheikh.
Thank you, Chair. Allow me to start off by thanking both IPED and SEF for their presentations this morning. I must admit that, yes, a hell of a lot of work has been done since the intervention by the President in terms of setting up this commission. My first question is, have we identified all the next of kin of the victims, or every one of them? And I'm a little bit concerned whether any of them were of foreign nationality.
All of them.
My second, any particular now? Oh, three, okay. And then we'll have a follow-up. Okay. The second thing is, as I see, we talk about the policy guidance now in terms of the recommendations by the Parliament Commission on the executive not making operational decisions, but the officer in overall command, provided that has the necessary training and things. Now, a lot of these incidents just happen suddenly and on the spur of the moment. And you might be in different provinces, in different areas, incidents of this particular nature. Now, do we have the capacity of people, the necessary capacity to be able to deal with this? Are we going to be identifying new officers from SAPS itself to be able to specifically train them in different areas, in different provinces, so that should the need arise that we have the necessary capacity there? Because, you know, waiting for somebody to get from one area can be actually determined, could be a serious challenge. So I'm not sure whether we have that then. Are we going on to both presentations here? Okay. I'll just jump on to the issue of IPAD. I would like to know what is the delay from the side of the National Prosecuting Authority, because a lot of work seems to have been done, matters seem to have gone through to NPN. What is really the delay in progress in finalizing matters from the NPA point of view? I'll stop this.
Okay. Honorable Ramachakani.
No, thank you very much, Honorable Chair, and end of the presentation. I think I agree that a lot of work has been done, as the presentation demonstrates. The general question for both minister, in terms of the presentation, what is the call it outlook for closing the implementation of all the recommendation? So there should be an outlook, there should be a plan to say we must close this by this date, and you work towards that particular date. I'm not getting that. What is actually the outlook when you are going to close these matters? That's a general question. Then the second question that I just want to find out is the IPED talked about resource, the resource, the scene 2 reconstruction, and it's been for some time that as a committee we heard about funding for reconstruction of scene 2. Now, I don't know what is the actual problem. Maybe the question is a twofold. Is to whether these request of 5 million, it was 5 million, is 3.9, to proceed with is whether the actual request properly motivated has been presented to the, because at the end of the day, the Minister of Police is the one that has to negotiate with the Treasury for additional resource for that work. I'm not quite hearing what is the hold up on that issue. What I'm hearing is that we will not going to be able to do it if we don't get the resources. Just want to remind the presenter that this is the commission that was established by the president. And the judge presented the recommendation, which were accepted to be implemented. If you don't find 5 million to implement this and reconstruction of the scene, is basically a problem that goes toward the challenging of the president outlook in terms of what needs to be implemented. Surely there should be 5 million found somewhere. It's to reconstruct the scene. I'm not hearing what the problem is. Now, I think the good thing is that we have both the minister in the room, and we have the head of the police, a general, also in the room, that if you sit around the table, some 5 million can be found. It's a year later since this matter has been going on. Chair, with all respect, I'm not getting what is the problem. That is now the question. Is that the second question? Am I stopping there or the third? Oh, okay. The other general question, Chair, is this one. The video footage's authentications. What is the problem? What's the actual problem on this? Because it's not the first time we hear about it. We're hearing about it. Maybe if you call you back again towards the end of the year, we'll hear about it. Who is responsible to making sure that the authentication of the video footage happens? Or you don't have it. You don't find the footages, like the memory stick that were lost we couldn't find and all that. So really the thing is, I'm not hearing what is the problem with that. Where is the holdup? Is it with the police? Is it the iPad? Where is the problem so that we can at least deal with that? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for your presentation. In slide 19, in the IPED presentation, you said IPED had started the process of training investigators on better handling of crime scenes. What I want to know, how many members from now are trained? My second question, in slide 22 on IPED, you said 152 cases of torture. Will you please indicate what the nature of the queries are and whether all of the referrals were sent back to the IPED? My third question is for the budget. What are the reasons from the Treasury for not wanting to provide the additional 3.9 million for the investigations? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Groenewald.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, firstly, I want to know, are there any members of the police services who are not officers, meaning management, that has been charged? And if so, how many and why? That is important for me because I make a distinction between the members who only act according to orders. The second thing is, Chairperson, I want to know whether we are not creating a precedent here. The state has ceded that the plaintiff's attorneys can appoint the medical experts and the cost will be for the taxpayer. Now tomorrow, if the police wants to arrest me and mishandle me and I need some medical experts, are you going to pay my medical experts as well? Or are we having a situation here because the president of the country, for political gains, make public statements and now we must pay for that? For me, I want quite clear clarity on that. Because if we say that in this specific case we can pay for that, then we can also, or then we should then also pay for other cases where ordinary citizens lay charges against the police where medical experts are needed. And that's all. I will spare the Minister the third question.
Thank you, Honourable Groenewald, Honourable Bailey. In a conciliatory mood this morning.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think it's just two points from my side. The first is, I actually want to agree with Honourable Ramatlakane when he made the statements that the solution to IPED's finding shortage challenge lies in this room, the solution lies at least in parts with this committee, and the fact that we're going to engage with the budget and APP process next term. We're going to make budget recommendations, and those will be processed by the Standing Committee on Appropriations. And this Parliament is the body that appropriates funds for government departments. And while we have the estimates from the Treasury, Parliament ultimately makes that decision as to where the final allocation happens. And as I've said before, I would strongly urge, given that I think the whole committee agrees that the implementation of the Farlam Commission recommendations as quickly and as effectively as possible is imperative, that we exercise our influence and our ability to contribute to that through the budget process. And that's something that's a drum I'm going to keep on banging, because we can't see that there's a problem or a challenge in the presentation. We acknowledge there's a problem. We have the ability to influence and to assist that, but then at the end of the day, throw our hands up. So we actually are not powerless in addressing this issue. This committee can kickstart process through the budgets that will result in alleviating that issue. And Chair, speaking on my second point, speaking of funds and speaking of budgets, this is the first time I can recall in terms of the committee's engagements with the Farlam Commission recommendation implementation so far, where we now have a estimated quantum of the financial cost, shall we say, of the Marikana massacre. Obviously, apart from the unquantifiable cost in human lives and the ripple effects of the families and the dependents of those who died and were injured. But we're now looking at a figure of just over 1 billion rand, which is startling at the least and mortifying at worst when you consider the broader context around low growth, high unemployment, the fact that we've got a real crisis economically, service delivery-wise, and governance-wise. So we're just digging this hole deeper and deeper. And, Chair, it need not have gotten this bad and could have been prevented, because when I heard the presentation, the first presentation, just looking at what are the recommendations to be, what's going to be implemented to implement the recommendations, these all speak to the issues of basics in the police service, that if they had been done sustainably and had been done effectively, we wouldn't have landed up where we were. The simple fact that we had to get or rely on the TRT, for example, as a component of the police operations on that day, speaks to the understaffing of the POP, of the public order policing, who, if they were adequately staffed and at capacity, would have been there in sufficient numbers without relying on a specialized unit like the TRT, which was a contributing factor in the rapid escalation and ultimate massacre that we saw. The mere fact that we're only now having to ensure the adequacy of training of members to use the equipment in scenes like that. Why weren't they trained in the first place? Why was the training not there and sufficient to ensure that it's only now we're having to review, only now having to implement? Similarly, with the under-equipping I always talk about, only now we're going to install cameras and we're having to poach from the A-wing to give to POP. Chairperson, it's a mess. But I will say, it sounds like it's on the road to recovery. I will still want to see that things play out the way they should and quickly enough. But we cannot be satisfied by the fact that things got this far and this bad and this deep when it was entirely preventable. Thanks very much, Chair.
Yeah, no, thanks, Jefferson. No, Jefferson, in the first place, I'm sorry that I came late. I was stuck in a terrible traffic here in Cape Town. I don't know what happened. It's as if God is visiting this place. probably. But I don't know, Jefferson. I'll be very frank and honest, Jefferson. I don't know whether then there is something that we are not told as members of the committee. You see, in our last meeting, The deputy minister was presented to us as a person that is completely in charge of this project, of the implementation of Marikana project. That's my understanding.
No, the transformation task, not the, that panel that's sitting there.
Okay.
There's two streams here.
Okay, sure. But nonetheless, Chairperson, the Marikana or the Falam Commission recommendations to me, they definitely need some kind of metrics of what you can call project management system, because not everything is going to be phased in at the same time because of financial constraints. Now, what are the priorities? Now, when things just come like a thunder rain to the committee, it will be completely unmanageable for us, because right now, I just want to bring to your attention, Chairperson, you know, we haven't finalized, there are other things that are completely unrelated to Falam Commission. For example, the Tetra, but which in the way will finally then boost the capabilities of policing in the country. Now we are talking about other big things like this water cannon system and all these things, and you find in the report somewhere that funding is also not forthcoming for that. Now it tells me that somewhere in the management process of this project, we are not precise as to what comes first. And what is then? What is the immediate, medium, and on the long term? Then that is the reason why you will have this particular problem of other high-ranking officers squashing information, and with us then expecting IPED to go and dig the undiggable in the main. Because I wonder how can I be allowed to investigate a person that is sitting in the office, for example. We are not hearing anything of the action to say the landmines have been cleared in this particular area for this particular unit to be able to move in and collect information. I don't know whether as a committee chairperson we are doing justice to this, and I think there must be some kind of unpacking of all these things so that we can then be able to actually take a final decision as to what comes first, what is expected in the medium term, and so that we don't club issues. Otherwise, the committee is going to be paralyzed. I'm sending a signal warning to this committee, because we are going to be paralyzed. We won't know where to start. And then I believe even the same with management goes. And we will forever have these outcries from the side of IPED, whom we expect, with also the human power they have. I don't really see them actually then meeting all these challenges. The constraints from the side of one member was asking about Honorable Ramachagan, what is delaying NPA in terms of effecting other? You have, for example, this Major General who released his firearm. What is actually then holding back these things? Are we expecting Chairperson the IPED to go as far as that level, or we need actually to come in as a committee and at the end of the day ask intervention of other committees, Justice Committee and all, to come to the play in order to be able to ensure that we leave no stone unturned in this whole process? If and only if we do it like this, Chairperson, I'm sorry, really. Our people who had gone down like pigs, even pigs are not killed like that, will forever remain victims. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Omar Shlongu. Maybe the third question from my side to SAPS. Now, in terms of the Red Book, you've got 242 million in your cruiser. You've got 242 for implementing Falam in terms of public order policing for this year. Now, you will be coming in May. But I think the member Mushlongu raises a valid point. In terms of the other presentation that was made available to us during the week, there's some items is highlighted, but, you know, what about the bulk of that 242? For instance, if you look at something like the radio communication, you've indicated in that presentation it's been sourced out, again, the helmet to the CSIR for a viable study. So what is the priorities of the 242? If you maybe just can give us the ballpark figures, because the real question is also, at the end of the day, when the POP units, in terms of the recommendations of FARM, is ready to move in terms of any operational requirement that might arise. So the question is, in terms of the 242 for this year, what are you going to use in terms of the FARM recommendations? That's the first round, and over to the Minister first, and then to IPED secondly. Thank you, Minister.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. Let me start with the issue where the Chair started off on demilitarization, and I think second I'll probably just mix up and blend a number of different interventions that have been made and responses thereto. I think it's to be expected, for an example, that the issue of demilitarization is quite a contentious kind of issue. It's part of that debate in our society, and it's really also expected that there will be views about the pace is slow and so on and so it goes. But the fact of the matter is, the Chair alluded to this point, that there is this particular study that is also being conducted. There is also the issue of the white paper on safety and security and issues of the white paper on police and so on, and all of these particular issues do also to one degree or another also inform the issue of the debate and the discussion on the question of demilitarization. Now, I don't take a simplistic view on the question of demilitarization, and more often than not, people tend to think that demilitarizing means doing away with the ranks. Now, I'm sure if we had somebody who studied military science here, will also tell us this thing and advise us accordingly. Because the question of ranks is just simply an order of things. That's what it is. It's an institutional order of things. And the danger is that if, you can do away with ranks, not because it's not possible, Honorable Chair, you can do away with ranks, but you are not going to achieve demilitarization because you have done away with ranks. Militarization stroke demilitarization, for an example, talks to the issue of attitude and approach to work. How do you execute your work, for an example? And I'm sure in the world there are a number of examples that can also talk to the issue of ranks on the one hand, but the fact is that as and when people approach their work, there's no exaction or prominence of violence, for an example, in the work that people have got to execute. So it's part of that debate. So I think the problem that you're going to have is that if you're going to narrow the debate to the issue of ranks alone and only, you're not going to achieve the desired results. And perhaps if we do ever arrive at the point where we review our ranks, because ranks can also be reviewed, by the way, whether we review them towards the question of doing away with them or whatever in future, that can also be properly achieved if you have the balance between the question of how well do you train your people and orientate your people as a contingent of people that have got to enforce the law, and particularly in public order policing kind of situations, how you then train them but also equip them in dealing with that. And I think these issues are going to be part of that. At some point, I was in a debate situation in some other informal arrangement, so this point about demilitarization, I think this fellow was very hot about it. So I asked one question. The fact that in the Salvation Army, Reverend, you have captains, does that make them non-religious or less religious? I think you have majors there or captains and all that, and that's what the Salvation Army structure. But it doesn't make them violent. You know, they still rely on the same scripture that we all follow, for an example. So, because I was trying to illustrate this point, that it's not your rank that necessarily does what you do, but it's the manner in which you have been trained and how you have been orientated, for an example, that then it talks to that issue. So in a sense, all I'm saying, Honourable Chair, is that it is to be expected also that the issue of the pace is gonna arise. But I think it's not a simple concept and a simple matter that can just be dealt with, just right away, just like that, and demilitarized overnight and so on. I would also encourage honourable members to also study these. At some point, I think I was still here in the mid 90s, doing something else. But somewhere else I was involved in some other thing. deliberately so, because I don't want to. But there was an interesting sort of explosive situation that, on the other hand, I was pulled into, which was not part of my institutional work here. And it pertained to the Department of Correctional Services, which itself demilitarized overnight. And overnight, you had the quite terrible situations that then cropped up there. And that's where perhaps I got pulled in somewhat to look into some of those issues. So, and I think it's a South African based kind of experience. You know, what happened as and when we approached the question of demilitarization in the context of correctional services in a hushy kind of manner, just an overnight kind of thing. It produced the unintended results, which of course took us quite some years to also deal with, even post that particular period of those particular incidences within that department. So I don't want to get into the specifics of that, but I'm just saying it would be useful for members to also mirror this debate and against the experience that we also have as a country, and specifically correctional services in this regard. I agree with both honourable members, for an example, on the question of the amount of work that has been done. The weakness that we identify ourselves is that the level of the conveyance of messages and updates on a regular basis, for an example, in terms of the work as it unfolds. And I think that's one particular defect that has got to be attended to. The number of interventions and initiatives, for instance, seated here, how many of us know about the interventions of the provincial government in the Northwest, the Premier, about what the program is about insofar as the issues of reconciliation there and the tangible programs that they are following. Now, you'll find that the possibility is that none of us know anything about that, precisely because, there hasn't been sufficient kind of, communication in regard to this. Similarly, also with the work that is now unfolding on our side around particularly the issue of the legal claims and so forth. There's very little that is known and consumed at a public level about that. And I think those are the defects on our side. That has got to be corrected. Now, the other issue is about the identification of the next of kin. All your next of kin that have been identified are all local. You don't have people out outside of the borders of the country. Now, but I think, you know, just the, we are taking advantage of this very same question. One of the things that we do need to note about this work in particular, identification of next of kin, the legal claims or whatever, is reaction based. In other words, we have to react against people who then say, look, I lost support, I was injured, I was unfairly arrested or whatever the case is and so forth, and therefore this is what I require from you as a state and so forth. So, and then we have got to react to that. So if, I think we need to bear that in mind. Do we have capacity to deal with operational decisions on the ground and so on? I think also the SAPS management will talk to that issue. but I don't think the Falam recommendation necessarily was about just the operational decisions. I think it raised the issue about communication as part of the facilitation of the operational decisions on the ground. And therefore, the report that we presented here begins to also talk to that in terms of how we are dealing with the question of, you know, the communication equipment and whatever else related thereto in relation to that specific recommendation. Otherwise, if we didn't have operational capability and capacity on the ground to manage operations such as, you know, public order policing, for an example, we wouldn't have been able to police most of the explosive situations that we have had to police post Marikana, for an example. So we wouldn't have succeeded at all. So, question of capability and capacity, it's a matter that does exist. The question of the measure, perhaps, is a different matter altogether, and so on. Honorable Ramadrakhan, on the question of the outlook for closing on the Falam recommendations, I think when we appeared, I can't remember whether it was 10 years ago or whenever, when we appeared before this portfolio committee, we spoke to the issue of the establishment of the panel of experts, as well as the establishment of the transformation task team. And in the presentations that we ran, the one part we said, look, we're putting together this panel of experts with various sort of expertise and constituencies, both local and international, particularly as per the recommendation of Judge Fallon, and that the duration for that panel is for an 18-month period. So if you're looking for the outlook, you know, that begins then to define, in a sense, your outlook in terms of the time span of this particular project. So we started at some point, but 18 months later, it is expected that the panel would then, by that particular period, would have unearthed a number of issues that are for further processing and facilitation at different levels within the institution. Now, but with insight, you also have the transformation task team. And the reason why you had to set up the transformation task team, it was precisely because a number of issues that were identified by the Falam Commission of Inquiry, they begin to talk to the issues of transformation within the institution of policing in this country. So they relate to that. So in other words, if you were to carry out the Falam Commission recommendations, they begin to redefine the outlook of the institution, both in terms of how it has got to carry out its work insofar as policing is concerned, and other issues, including the question of reviewing certain standing orders, for an example. And those issues are matters of transformation as well. So you're beginning to then transform the institution and change it from one particular level to the next, or to whatever the level is, and so forth. And that's where the concept of the transformation task team comes in, to then begin to zoom into a number of these issues. So at a broader sort of issues of policy, if I may loosely put it that way, that's where your panel of experts functions are chaired by the honorable judge behind you. And then the transformation task team chaired by Reverend Dr. Is that correct? Is it Reverend or the Doctor first? I think Reverend, because it's a calling. Being a doctor is what you just chose. So the Reverend Doctor. behind. So he chairs the transformation task team. Now, and the duration of the transformation task team is for I think about a three-year period, if I'm not mistaken. I think that's what it is. So in other words, the work of the panel of experts in relation to the following commission's recommendations, yes, at designing certain issues and identifying issues to be attended to and so on, that's what your panel will do for an 18-month period. Your transformation task team then says, look, how do we then deal with the issues that the panel would have identified for implementation, facilitation thereof? And perhaps let me just take in the issue raised by Honorable Mhlongo. I can hardly see you there. Firstly, you're too black and you're in the corner there. just thinking. I could only identify you by your voice, because I'm just thinking, hey. Nevertheless, and therefore, when you raise the issue of the project matrix, which is something that I agree with, but remember also that we appeared before you and said, for both the panel and the transformation task team, at both support and coordination level, you then require an institutional arrangement, and that's why you then had to set up a program management office. Okay. Now, the program management office, as the term says, alludes to this question. It's a project that has got to be driven, and it has got to be managed, and it has got to be coordinated within, the office setup and so on. But and therefore that...
Sorry, Minister, sorry, I just want to... Yeah. Sorry to disturb you. I just see there's now a tendency this morning, Honorable Groenewald and your guest, there's no official tea time yet, and it's disturbing the Minister and the Speaker and the members to concentrate. So I really ask our guest and everybody, there is official tea time in 10 minutes' time. Let's give the necessary respect to the Speaker and the panel that gives us their responses. Thank you. Minister, you can continue.
No, thank you very much, and particularly because it's Honorable Groenewald. In that regard, Honorable Chair, I've got some Smirnoff in my bag. So I can help you with that. The question of the concept of the project matrix and project management is then, of course, a matter that is then, Honorable Jomane, located in the program management office. Now, but like all other projects, when you manage a project, there are things that you do not have a controls on. For an example, it's not by our determination that you then have got litigation matters to the extent to which we have. And that, indeed, that then also becomes a pressing sort of point, a pressure point of sorts, because we do need to respond to the issue of the claims by our people against the state and how we therefore need to begin to satisfy those particular claims. But related to that very same issue is the difficulty relating to, you know, legal matters, for an example, they tend to take a life of their own. You can easily pace yourself that, and I'm happy that in the House we have the judge here, we have the former magistrate as well in the form of Mr. Mongwe and so on. They would know what I'm probably talking to, and of course the advocates there. Now, you can easily say as an organization or as an institution, no, within a week this is what we'll do, okay, on the legal front in terms of settling these particular matters and so forth. But because of other legal processes and whatever forms of wrangling that could be there, the towing and froing and whatever and so forth, you could easily end up with a situation where, from a project management point of view, it's no longer a week, it's beyond a week, and so on. So I think we also need to accept that some of those issues will also impact on the manner in which how the both progress and pace that we make in relation to an issue of this nature. So both your medium and long term, because I think your point dovetails with the point that Honorable Ramachakane raised, you know, the project outlook. What is the project outlook? So I think it's intertwined in a sense. And that's why I'm saying to both of you that you have the 18-month period for the panel of experts. You have the 3-year period for the transformation task team to then deal with a whole range of issues arising out of the broader policy issues that would have been identified at the level of the panel of experts. Now, maybe because I'm on the issue around the legal issues and so forth, Honorable Groenewald, the question of medical experts. Now, I think I don't think the mere fact that there has been activation of medical experts, for instance, in this particular instance, means that that's going to be a standard sort of a feature or procedure per se. I don't think it implies that. I don't think also that it's meant to set up a precedent of sorts into the future. I certainly don't think so. But it's more to do, and it's linked to the litigation process as well. If for argument's sake, I'm just thinking roughly here, if for argument's sake you are claiming damages against me, and you say, look, I'm one-legged today because of what you did for whatever and so forth, and I think that's where medical sort of experts would come in to determine the nature of injury and the extent of that injury. Now, both these two points that I'm relating to the nature and character of injury as well, nature and character of injury, in a sense will also inform the quantum to be arrived at a legal level in terms of claiming. So My understanding, basically, that's what I'm trying to simplify around the question of this issue of medical experts, that it shouldn't be seen as a matter that is completely outside of the litigation process. It's actually part of the litigation process in the sense that it will then inform your principles and law of quantum, for an example, when it comes to issues of the claims that have been mounted against us and so forth. So I think that's basically it. I'm not sure whether I understood your first question about how many people have been arrested and whatever is the result. I think General Kruger will certainly respond to that question. Honourable Mbele, I think just two things. There's something that you said about quantifiable costs for the Marikana tragedy. I think it would be wrong in the first instance to see it that way, because what is the quantifiable cost, for an example, for the Marikana tragedy? How do you arrive at it, and so on? Because what we have, the 1.1 billion that we presented here, amongst other things, we have an amount of money that is then linked to a certain number of individuals. A loss of support, injury, issues of arrest, and of course, fatalities such as deaths and so on. So it's linked to that. But you don't think that's the quantifiable cost of the tragedy itself? I mean, because I don't know how you can even begin to measure that thing. Whether there is a figure that exists in the world, I don't think there's a figure that exists in the world, for instance, that can quantify what happened there in Marikana. And then, of course, the second thing is that it will assist, and yes, in relation to what Oren Bele said, but also just a general counsel really to all of us, that yes, we can do the wailing about, this thing couldn't have happened if it was this or that or this, whatever, and so on and so on. We can do that. But what's the value add? That becomes the question. Now, for me, it would be important to then say, look, we must be firm and be resolved that this thing shall never happen. That's one point. That's a standing point. The second point is that from what happened in Marikana, we should derive lessons, definite lessons out of it. All of us, basically, involved in that tragedy. But also, what do we do with those lessons? And this is why we had to zoom into the question of the need for us to begin to expeditiously respond to the Falam Commission recommendations, because we must address that question. So we must address two questions. The question is, how do we rectify what happened? But how do we also begin to take steps and measures that say we should ensure that going into the future, we never ever experience what we went through in August 2012 at Marikana and so forth. So I think that's the one part. Now you,
Minister, maybe at this stage.
Yes,
sorry for interrupting. We're going to take a 10-minute break. Then we come back for the minister and the police's response, as well as IPED and the second round. 10 minutes, colleagues. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.